This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Philadelphia-based visual artist Lily Ye is the founder, executive director, and lead artist of the Village of Arts and Humanities. The Village is a community of volunteers and paid workers that turns abandoned lots in North Philadelphia into community gardens, art centers, and parks. I've come to conceive of the Village as a living piece of sculpture, she explains, in which sculpture is a communal event. The walls are shaped and touched by people's hands, including as many people from the community as possible. The Village's primary focus has always been the North Philadelphia area, but Ye has also taken the work to Nairobi, Kenya, and has plans for Village projects in Ecuador and China. In addition to her work with the Village, Ye is an accomplished painter and taught art and art history at the University of the Arts for 30 years. She received her MFA in painting from the University of Pennsylvania. A few of us had the opportunity to spend some time with Lily at the Village of Arts and Humanities several weeks ago. From the moment she stepped into the street to greet us, we felt the energy around us transform. Every person who spotted her on the street was met with an intimate and enthusiastic greeting from Lily. It took us almost 10 minutes to get into the building from the sidewalk. Once in her office, Lily's shrewdness, her optimism, and integrity transfixed those of us who had never met her before. Those of us who had met her just sat back and smiled. As we left, I felt that if Lily conveyed as much to us here tonight as she did to the group in that course of that brief off-the-cuff encounter, so much about a life of compassionate action, a life full of practicing art and demanding justice, then we would be lucky indeed. It's not every evening that we are privileged to encounter an individual who began her career with painting and sculpture and cleared a path for herself to community arts and economic activism. It is my pleasure to introduce Lily Ye.
Thank you so much. This is really quite a special evening, not only because this is the first place that I came to when I stepped off from Taiwan. I was born in China but grew up in Taiwan, and University of Pennsylvania was the first place I landed. And I never left this place, I mean, the Philadelphia, the city that holds the university. And so coming back after 30-some years, it's quite heartwarming, nostalgic, and really happy to see so many young faces here. And also, I'm so happy today is because my family from the Village are here. I would like actually to have them recognized because it is so wonderful. Mama Debbie, I see your big, I see your smiling face, and little Junior Andrew, you wave to people, yes. And of course, Earl Dax, being at the Village, yes, yeah. And then our young people right there, and we hope them they will come to the college and maybe at university, my old school. So that's Jamil studying architecture at Chad, yes. And Brian, so our poet, and Yetundi, our little general, running everybody working. And who else I can't see? Where is Silas? Yes, oh, Silas, wonderful. Video person wanting to study medicine, right? Yeah, so anybody else from the Village? Oh, yes, Lou, right there, our new staff. How wonderful. Thank you, thank you. And most of all, thank you for this opportunity. I just want to, since I'm a visual artist, everything is really about process. So I have a lot of slides, and I will go through them like more like film. That would tell my story. And if we can have the room completely dark, is that possible or not so good? Yeah, it's okay. Then we can really concentrate on the slides where it matters, yeah. So it all started in 1986. I taught at the University of the Arts for already quite a long time. And then in 1986, I met Arthur Hall, who was the founder of the Ile Ife Black Humanitarian Center. And so I met him, always admired his work because he was one of the first generation dancers. He brought pride and dignity and sense of history to the people in North Philadelphia. Anyway, so I was doing installation in galleries and gardens, and he liked my work, and I admired his work. And so he said that next to my building, there was one house lot, and would you come and help me to build the park? And if you look at this, where the people were, they were all buildings, but dilapidated buildings. So I said, one lot, you know, probably shouldn't be too much a problem. So I didn't know what I was saying either. I was younger and full of enthusiasm. And I said, yeah, I'll help you to build a park, not really understanding what that meant. And also I thought, well, you know, I don't know how to build a park, and it would not become real, you know, but for now it's good. And so I went about and wrote a proposal to Council on the Arts. And so I thought, well, $5,000 should be able to build a park. That's how much I know about building parks. And then so the Council on the Arts gave me $2,500. I was totally stunned that they would give me money. And then that summer, 86, all the houses were leveled. 10 houses were leveled. So it was not one house lot. It was 11 house lots, something like that. And I went back, and I have $2,500 in my hand. I said, man, how do you start this, you know, with this? And so I said, since I knew nothing about building a park or doing outdoor things, and I said, let me ask my professional friends. So I went to them, and they say, wow, it's a drop in the bucket. You don't have enough money, so do a feasibility study and forget about the building of the park. I said, well, that's one solution to the problem. And then they also said that you're Chinese and the children in the neighborhood are going to destroy everything you built. And I said, wow, this is less likely that I would build a park. And so when I thought about it, I was really scared. And I said, how do you even start? You know? And so as I said, well, maybe I can write a letter and resign from the project and withdraw from the project since the scenario changed. As I was preparing the letter, a little voice in me, I always call that my inner light, a little voice in me just said that if you don't rise to the occasion, the best of you will die. The rest will not amount to anything. And so I thought about it. And I said, further down the years, I have to look at myself in the mirror. I don't want to say that I regret or I was afraid. I want to be able to face myself. So I said, okay, I will give it a try. At $2,500, not much of anything, but should be enough to buy shovels and so forth. And so I went to Arthur, and I said, Arthur, I need help. So he said, Joe, go and find Jojo. Jojo is the thin man with the hat, the duck hat. And so I remember arriving at his house, he was already gone. And the third time, I realized that he was dodging me. He was saying, I don't want to have anything to do with that crazy Chinese woman. But he was tying his shoelaces. He was one step too late. So I said, Jojo, you got to help me. So I talked to him, and he liked the idea, and he wasn't really working. And so we are together. And he was the strong man in the neighborhood, and the kids on the street were drawn to him. And so we all came. That's how we started. And then, so I said, well, how does one build a park in such an environment? And I remember, I realized that from the very beginning, I was already doing everything wrong because I didn't have a map, I didn't have a plan, I didn't have a drawing, I didn't have a model, I had nothing, okay? I went in and I said, well, I got to start somewhere because I didn't know how to start. And then so I said, abandoned lot, there is something the same everywhere. It's barrenness and it's chaotic feeling because there is no sense of direction. And I said, for us to create and turn an abandoned lot into a sense of place, we need a center, a sense of centeredness. Years later, I realized that it was from my own center that I start building. And physically, it become the center of this place. So I literally pick up a stick and drew a circle. And so I said, well, let's dig from here. And the kids came by because there's nothing going on. So they saw us poking around. And they said, can we help? And I said, sure, there's the shovels and the spade. And this place also calls for growth, anything green. And we didn't have money to buy trees. Trees are expensive. So we bought lath wire, and the children were very enthusiastic. So we made our cement trees. And Georgia waters it every day, waters the cement. And was it effective? Yes, it make village grow so big. And so finally, this was a summer project, and I was happy to create a mural. I promised the Council on the Arts a mural. And I said, 8 by 10, a small mural. I said, what makes sense to paint here? This place is so barren, it cries for water. And the cheapest way to bring the maximum amount of water here is to paint the ocean, right? So I said, it needs color. So sunset in the ocean, and that's how it became. And so this is the end of the two summer months. It doesn't look like anything, but it's a beginning. It's like we planted the seed. And what was interesting was that I never had the intention to come back. And I was scared to go in. Every day was a struggle. And then when I finished it, I dust the dust off my pants. As I said, well, I'm going to write a report. It was a successful project. I put it on my resume, and we move on to better places. It isn't that how we were taught, you know? So, and with no intention to come back. And yet, that whole year, I couldn't get it out of my mind. Something, the process, got hold of me. Every day I would be thinking about it, figuring out how to get more money to go back. And I think you heard, with the flower show coming, you heard this wonderful organization, Horticulture Society. It has a branch called the Philadelphia Green. And it's a wonderful organization. So they came, I convinced them to come and help us. So they brought us black dirt and wood chips. The first day, first load of black dirt was very powerful, with steams rising and dragonflies and children run after that. That was the beginning of hope in this desert land. And so they gave us a lot of wood chips, and children came, were so happy, pushing the wheelbarrow around. Little Yama was 3 and a half, and he brought his toy truck to help us to transport them. And then when I continued for 3 summers, that was the only summer months I could work there. The rest of the time, I teach at the university to earn my living. And I asked Jojo, I said, why there were not adults? No adults came and help us, because they would sit on the doorstep, but they would not come and help us. So I said, why didn't they come help us? Only kids. And Jojo was so stunned by the naivety of my question. So he said, helping you? They're laughing their teeth off about your project. So I was a little hurt. I said, that's a little extreme. And he said, because they say it is a woman and a bunch of children, and they didn't know what they were doing. And I thought about it, And I said, man, they were right on the target. We didn't know what we were doing. A woman and a whole bunch of children. And look what we did, you know. It's make your teeth fall off. Isn't it kind of broken teeth and so forth? But the important thing was that we were doing it. We were doing it. And I remember in 1990, 4 years into the project, that was the first time I raised enough money to properly paint the mural. And this is the first transformation. We call this park Ile Ife Park to commemorate Arthur Hall's legacy. Arthur Hall, the organization folded in 1988, and he passed, blessed his soul. And so Ile Ife. And then, just a few steps across the little alleyway, and there is another house collapsed. So city came and cleared the ground, and we have a little alley. So being a painter, the only thing I know how to do better than other things is to paint. And I said, what makes sense to paint here? I feel our community is full of danger. I feel our community is like a minefield for our residents, especially for our young people. And so I said, since I don't know any other way to evoke the goodwill, so I said, let's evoke the protection of the angels. And because this is mostly African-American residents, and I said, the angels need to be from Africa to honor the heritage, cultural heritage, and the identity of our people. And that's how the Ethiopian angel become. And so you have a miniature of our community. You have me and the artist from outside, and you have Jojo there smiling, you have a little child there, and you have big man there, okay? Big man represent is a really a community, big man is big, right? Isn't he big? Right, okay. But he is also called big for darker reason, because he used the drug for 20 years and was dealing, you know. And he knew many, many people. He came to the village because his body was in ruins, and he was actually looking for refuge temporarily and at Jojo's house. Jojo lived in a broken house. Whatever, broken house. Very poor in our standards. But amazing, he provided refuge for many, many homeless people. Just amazing so I was doing mosaic, so I was needing everybody to help me. And he started to put a color, mosaic on the wall. And so people in the resident saw this destructive force, now it's putting color one after the other on the wall, and they look good. And they would just say, wow, this looks good. Big men rarely experience positive feedback up to this point. So every drop of appreciation, the comment of appreciation is like a drop of water onto this withered plant. So he was fed by people's appreciation. And so he said to himself, if Lily comes back next summer, I will leave drug. And it's 13 years clean. Because of big man that we have, the village, it hosts 4 nights a week, every week for 10 years, people in narcotic meetings. So then in 1991, he was suffering severe diabetes and physical pain. He could hardly stay up more than 2 hours. And Mama Debbie is his sister and came to take care of her. That's how we trapped her at the village. And knows that and it was the making of the angels that got him up every morning. And this is our angel alley. And this has protected the community in an untold and effective and powerful way. Then, a few steps up our little street, Alder Street, okay? There's another a series of abandoned lot. We have so many. And so this time since I don't know, I didn't know how to do any other things. I didn't know how to build houses or make health people more healthy and so forth. The only thing I know is paint on the wall or to build gardens. Okay, and so I said, well, I would like to build a place where people can relax, reflect, reconnect, and recenter. I felt our people need that, especially inner city life is very condensed and a lot of conflict. And so I call it meditation park. So I put the crew together, and that's our crew, you know, the unemployed from our neighborhood. And so I said, well, maybe we need professional people to help us and to make the ground leveled and nice and so forth, since this was sponsored by NEA and Pew and all the big funders. And then I realized that we can't do that because it wiped out a lot of our project, and our people would never get the chance to learn, to make mistake, to learn the skill, and to be empowered. I said, we have to do it ourselves. And I remember a story. I said, what is the most difficult thing in the building? And that's the digging into the ground, because the ground is solid debris. So if you dig too long, you get electric shock because of the bricks and the stones. So I said, we need Bobcat. So I was just kind of, you know, going my way one step at a time. So I said, okay, let's call rental tool company. I said, do you have Bobcat? So they say, yes, we do have Bobcat. When do you need it? So I was shocked. I said, oh, no. He didn't know. Nobody knew how to drive it. Then I thought, well, maybe it means that if I have driver's license, that means I can drive Bobcat. So I said, oh, this is too complicated. So tomorrow we'll figure that out. So we rented the Bobcat. And then somebody from our neighborhood, we found somebody who went to school for it. And also the driver was very wonderful. He was moved by what we do. And so he took time out and taught us. And there's a chart there, and you just follow the chart movement, and you can operate the Bobcat. All of us knew how to drive Bobcat. So we dug down, and we also learned how to pour cement. And one thing, for 20-some years, I always felt myself a misfit. I didn't fit in any category. My work didn't hit home. And then somehow, in doing this project, all my weakness became my strength. For example, I knew nothing about park building, so I needed people to help me. That is how people in the neighborhood can step in a meaningful way. And then I didn't know anything about concrete cement or construction and so I get the best advice, per expert in the field to advise us. And so we all become masonry expert. So if you look at here, this is the wall I wanted to build, sculpture wall. And before before I put the undulating form, if you take that away, the wall was perfectly straight. We all were good mason then. We actually overbuilt. You can build 3-story high on this foundation. And but I was very unhappy. I looked at it and I said, there's something so mundane about the form and the space. And then I remember the beautiful undulating form of Malian architecture. And I said, this is perfect. Let's recycle the broken pieces and reinvent them in something beautiful. And this is when I feel music come into architecture. And this is before the space and after the transformation. And this is our meditation part. This is the first level of transformation. Sometimes I feel what we do in village, I call it urban alchemy. It is from lead, how do you turn it into gold? And so it is not just physical transformation, it involves emotional, mental, and spiritual transformation to really build community. And so you will see other levels of transformation by other things we do. And so being an artist, so I was able to bring in all the elements that I like Chinese gardens, like Islamic courtyard. Houses broken down, so all of us together, we put our heads together, we figured out and we renovate. This is before, this is after. And this is the tree of life I designed, and Islamic influence, and Big Man completed this. So we became a very good team. We're blessed with another huge lot full of trash. Okay, so I figure the trash removal is to test our strength and test our will. The abandonment is opportunity to turn things around. I think because 9/11, you all heard about the Chinese word, the word crisis. Crisis means danger and opportunity. It is when things broken down that is exactly where transformation and the new things can begin. And this is the transformation. 15 families cultivated the garden, vegetable garden. And the chief of vegetable garden is Mrs. Bixby, chief of vegetable garden on your right. And so we grew seedlings in the basement, and we passed on to Taisha, 6 years old. Very happily, we plant them in the vegetable garden, and in the fall, the families come and harvest them. Okay? In our community, I think not just our community, I think in our society is really in danger of fragmentation, not only of different people of different professions, different expertise, different male and female, different generations. It's all of this fragmentation. And for us, it's reconnecting in every way, wherever we can. And the important thing always is about our next generation and how to pass on all the things we have learned. So planting and garden, urban greening is one very powerful tool. The other thing is that food. I think we all suffer from the high sugar and the fat in industrial prepared the food. In our neighborhood, especially, any kind of illness you talk about, hypertension, heart disease, anything, we got it there. And the bad food habit when the children are young was a very, very serious problem, because once you like the fatty food, it's very difficult to change. So we try to bring cooking and healthy cooking, go to the garden, get the vegetable and whatever. At least theoretically we tried to do that. Now, I think there is another very, for our children to succeed, we need to do heroic effort to fight all the roadblocks for our children. And the most severe, and that's the mental block. I think our society does that to all of us. You know, March is coming. It's Women's Month, because women doesn't feel powerful enough. So we have to have Women's Month to celebrate our things and so forth. Men, the same thing. Our boys are under tremendous pressure, okay? Adults also, and especially our community. And because the powerful commerce tells us, you're not quite somebody if you don't wear this brand, right? You're not quite somebody if you don't get this degree, or you don't work in the glittering towers. You are not quite somebody. And seeing our children slipping through our fingers daily, so with urgency, we say to our community and our children, let's clear the table. Let's start step one. And we say that, look at you. You are magnificent. You're beautiful. And you're talented. And in our neighborhood, to live through a day, we have already accomplished. And so some of the children, they are used to street. They will not come into our program. I said, doesn't matter. We come to you. And we say, look at your neighborhood. Don't just hear it's bad land. Yes, we're broken. Yes, we're there's abandonment, there's drug, there's abuse, there's poverty, all that. Yes, we have that. But we're all dysfunctional, yet together we're whole. And we're like, that's why we use mosaic. From brokenness, we recreate ourselves into beauty and joy. So we said, look at yourself, look at your family, and look at your neighborhood, and celebrate the difficulty and try to embrace them, because that is nature's way in testing your will, testing your muscle, and you have to endure, understand, embrace, and you can climb to a higher future, brighter future. And so they would write wonderful things. Sometimes if you listen, it's like pearls dropping out of our children's mouth. And so we collect the images, and then that's how the Village Press were born. And we have published other things, modest but very good taste, and we try to give the best quality we can. But this is the beginning with out of the need to honor our people, especially our children. And the building next to the park was abandoned in 1988. Arthur Ho left the town. Jojo first came to me and said, well, you better put some oil in, otherwise it's going to, winter going to freeze and drug use are going to move in. I was, of course, always feel frightened and always fearful every day, trying to do my job really in fear and trembling, because I just didn't know sometimes how to hold the weight. What is the next step? Where's the money going to come? And all this the demands more and more. And lo and behold, sometimes I feel Village is not me. It's all of us. We are doing something right, something organic, that we are in the right path, that things come to us at the right time. For example, when the building was abandoned, I didn't know how to deal with it. And lo and behold, a person came in. His name is Stephen Sayer. He knew about the education. He knew about renovation. And he was a lawyer, and he was interested in nonprofit. That's how Village was born in 1989. And then with big men, with a lot of people in the neighborhood, we renovated, converted the building. It's still functioning. Many, many of our children graduated from this program. Raggedy maybe today. You know, this looks nice when it first finished. And if you look at it, it's very simple. It's mostly 2x2x8. But it worked. And then this is very typical of our scenario before, upstairs. After, that's our first office, and that's how we have nonprofit space. Sometimes the whole facade just caved in, you know, and we say Humpty Dumpty, no matter, we put it all together again. And so that becomes our main thoroughfare, the little Alder Street, we call it the Village Heart area. So slowly we did this and that and that and this without really intentional, and yet the most recent accomplishment is that we built six houses. There are 4 bedrooms, they are HUD money, they are professional, they are all sold, people are very happy, we just celebrated the people living there, and that's the Village Homes project. So we grow with the demand, and so because we have our building, then in 1991, we started year-round after-school program. So in joy, in creativity, we learn and celebrate. Multicultural classes to prepare our children to meet the global village, global world. And we might be low-tech, our community. We expect high technology, high skill for our children. Our children will accomplish and achieve, and some of them are getting scholarship, going to college, for example, you know, digital camera, photography, and so on and so forth. In classes, we try to hold intergenerational in summertime, and then because of Arthur Ho's legacy, we have some dance and ethnic dance especially, and that's our children celebrating, and so. Just to take a quick detour, in 1994, I got a grant to go to Africa. This was in Kenya. And art, if you're artists, you are interested in Africa because it's impact the 20th century music, art in every way. And so I never thought I could do a community building project there, and somehow I got connected with Father Alex, who lived with the poor in this community called Kokochu, 150,000 people huddling around this huge dead lake. And they recycle trash, or they live here because it's poor, so that they walk to Nairobi to service the office and the rich there. And this is how people live. 60% of Kenyans live in this way. And we went through the trash site. And this is the dump site. This are some of our the children, Mukuru children in our project. So, Father Alex has a church. That's the only place you have solid walls to paint. And we have a lot of children. And 800 children use this space. So I try to engage as many people as I can. So everything involved, the children, you mix the paint, you paint the wall, you get the adults involved. And this is before, this is a little classroom. Over the fence is that huge dump site. And this is after. And you can see the bleak churchyard. And this is the front of the church, and this is the transformation in the back. I mean, after. This is facing the courtyard before, and this is after, in the process. I was so frightened because there's no fresh air. If there are 100 different kinds of disease, if you read the guidebook, you know, and then you're afraid to drink water, you're afraid to. So I covered myself solidly with my big glasses, and so this is the moment I let my guard down, my scarf was down. But at the beginning, I have long sleeve, everything. I covered myself up. I said, oh, I hope the community didn't mind. And one child was so sweet, and she said, you must be a ninja painter. I said, oh, thank you, thank you. And it's like performance. Painting was like performance. Everything was a sense of, there's a sense of such wonderment in transforming the despair into something joyful and so forth. This is afterwards. And I remember making the angels and finding home for the angels. And there is this abandoned quarry, and there is the iron rods. I said, that's perfect for my angels. But the site is the most unlikely site, because you see the lavatory on your right, and then you see where they burn trash, right? There's a platform. Over the fence, that's where the huge dump site. And I said, this is the perfect place for my angels, because the angel needs to be placed in such desperation. And when they burn the burn trash, the smoke of Kokocho becomes the incense of those angels. And they guard that community. And of course, no one had thought art was possible to make such a transformation. We have a huge celebration. When we talk about celebration, it's over 1,000 people. And I said it's very, very important for people, for outside people, to come into this desolate place and full of people. So there were 12 international people from the different embassies. The very last moment that morning, American ambassador herself came in. And you can feel the joy and sense of hope palpable. You can feel it. And that's American ambassador, and that's Father Alex. And the children and the community sent to us, thank you for coming here. But please, when you left, do not forget us. And Father Alex understands, sometimes in places like that, we might not be able to change things, but we can fully be there to bear witness, so that the people's sufferings are not in vain and they don't feel they are forgotten. The most recent, most recent project, now it's getting bigger. This is a brown field, 2.5 acres, and left by Westinghouse, and was heavily polluted. And we transformed it. Again, I didn't know how to do tree farm, nor our community, but Ken Koloje walked in at the right moment and helped us. So now we have wildflowers, And then we turned it into a business. So the high point in summertime, we grow 20,000 tree seedlings. So it's more like a tree nurseries. We grow it and we sell it to Fairmont Park and so forth. So, and we have over 60 teens in the last 2 years. In summertime, 55 teens, paid intern working there. And we hired people from the neighborhood to become tree men. Of course, this is right in the center. Trees are small because 2.5 feet down is solid concrete. And yet we have trees that blossoms. And so, of course, we always have art. We populate our grass with mosaic animals. And so we create out the village Serengeti. So the last group of a project is theater. Now, you see that our young men there, they are poet or they are in theater, and the theater is very successful. We started in 1991, and 5 years into the project, and people tell me stories. Those stories often tear you apart and destroy a person, a family, and the community, because they are dark, they are difficult. If you hold it inside, it erodes your inside. So when people trusted me and gave me the story, I became the holder of the materials from the community. And I said, these materials must be aired, and it must be aired in the most public way. And in doing that, then we can integrate the dark material. Otherwise, it will torn the community asunder. And so, there are interviews, people's stories. Those are the mothers, women in our community is more matriarchal. You know, women carry the load. And here they are sharing their stories. And this one, imagine it is in a very, it's quite dim room because it's a very, very sinister and destructive and dark story. It's three generations of incest and have destroyed many people in the family. And it's so, we couldn't say it in words, and we couldn't describe it. So it is through silence and through photographs of disintegration that we told the story of this dark scene. And this is a group of children, dead children speaking. We have our community held so much grief and abuse, and we have lost our children, and we find way to express it. And then, yet. And I remember when I first started the theater project, people say that you started in the, you don't have director, no screenplay, no theater, no expert, no stage, no audience, no nothing. So I said to him, I said, you don't understand. We do it for our survival. We must do it, and we found a way to do it. And you will see how successful the program is. And of course, it's because we have this most compassionate, talented person named H. German Wilson to be our director. After the theater, we always celebrate. Although this is North Philadelphia, it's a place of brokenness and sorrow and many, many traumas, yet that is the place I personally had experienced tremendous, probably most profound love and celebration. And so here we celebrate life and living. Every year we do that. And of course, we pass on to our young. And we teach, this is about slavery, about reading and learning, and we wear masks. That was 3 years ago, isn't it, Jamil? And we get the best artists. It is the quality, it is the dedication, it is the passion of the people who come in contact, our children come in contact. That is what will move our children. And so this is Dadie. We met him in Ivory Coast, and he is in this country, and he's been working with our children. That is what our youth theater look like. They look glorious, isn't it? And they are on the move. And they have been in Atlanta, in Boston, in New Mexico, right? And they are on their way to Maine. The last part is our celebration. Every year, we celebrate how wonderful we are. Basically, we're a disfranchised community. You know, nobody come to see us and so forth. I mean, especially at the beginning of the project. As it doesn't matter, we celebrate our own wonderment. And so, in the fall, when we harvest, and we dress our children up in color, and we buy things from Italian market, and we're dressed up. And then we have a simple ritual, and we go to every single household in the whole community, especially our children. We say, may the good spirit bless this neighborhood. May the good spirit bless this household. And may the good spirit bless all the children. We do it every year since 92. It's our tradition now. And this is the year when Mayor Rendell was with us. And we offer a basket of fruit. And you look at inner city, sometimes it's like urban jungles. We don't have homeless, but we have many people make do live in the houses. And so people say that, oh, you have drug, when we started, we have drug users, we have people, you know, abusing and whatever. But I say, that's our community. What you might not like, your family members, you cannot deny that they are part of your family. And so you deal with that, and we realize that without doing things, the drug houses moved out because of positive action. Anyway, we were all there, and we looked just glorious. And out of a moment of silence, a little boy jumped up, said, I am a king. I am an African king. I was stunned, and I looked at ourselves, and I said, yes, we dressed up for our children, and we are their courtiers, and we celebrate for them. The pivotal point of the year is the rites of passage. You see our handsome young men and young women with us. And this is where that space went through another transformation from just a regular park. It became a ritual place. We cleansed this with incense, with prayers, with invocations, and with torch. It became a magical place. And so the teens in their ritual gowns, and then the community in torches, and the community took pledge to the teens and say that we will stand by you, we are your foundation. And the teens take pledges to the community, say that we will respect you, we will live our potential, and we will take the light to the future. It was that frail voice, it was that little light in me that brought me to North Philadelphia. I passed it on, and I want our children to pass it on, and they are in a really glorious way. The last three slides to show you where we are. This is our heart area. We intensely renovate and build. We call it the Village Heart in 4th Street area, right where Germantown and 10th Street split. That's where we are. This is 10 square block area. We work with, that's where our tree farm, and we have a park. The Divine Eagle Philadelphia football team, Eagles, landed at the village 2 years ago and gave us a beautiful playground. 150 ball players, everybody, including McNubb, and was there with our community. It was magical. Anyway, and the schools and public housings and so forth, we work with them to turn the community, turn the abandonment into life, into beauty, into joy. And this is what we call our service area, 260 square block, where we provide artists, we provide urban greening techniques and so forth. And then we work with Daniel Boone High School, we work with Stetson, you know, they're on the, so anyway, that's our service area upside down. No, right side up. So, to end the presentation, this is where I began. You know, when I came here, I was already a full-grown person. My sensitivity was really rooted in China, in this kind of landscape. And so when I came here, the hardest thing was really the sense of value, the sensitivity, what I was taught and believing. A lot of time came directly in clash with the mainstream American culture. it took me, I am such a late bloomer, you know, it took me 20-some years to find out who I was and to find out what being woman is about. How do you be a Chinese-American woman and kept your cultural heritage and keep your integrity and fully be in contemporary? It took a long time. But once I found out who I was, I stepped into my being. And my being is connected with that deep, rich water that has no boundary, you know. And so I came here looking for that sense of that space, which I learned in the Chinese painting. They call it, Chinese call it the dustless place. The dust refer to mental pollution, of attachment, of egohood, of emotion, and all that. And so because the place is pristine, it's beautiful, and it's tranquil, and yet this tranquility contains the most vital opposites. You know, it's like the circle of Tao. And so when I came here, I lost that sense of place. So not until I stepped into North Philadelphia and to be able to build parks and gardens and to recreate that sense of place that I begin to find home in that place. So people ask me, you're Chinese, why don't you do things in Chinatown? I said, sometimes life didn't work out that way, so I just want to end the presentation with a simple poem by Langston Hughes, and it's Estet in Harlem. Strange that in this nigger place I should meet life face to face, when for years I've been seeking life in places gently speaking, until I came to this back street and found life stepping on my feet. Thank you. Very good question. I feel this is my 16th year there. Okay, I feel before was really like playing Go, the game. You know, there's a broken lot here. You have the resource. You know, people are interested. You fix a little bit here. You fix a little bit here. And as you fix things, more things collapse. You know, that's like that's why. So anyway, but now after so many years, and you put all those, you know, stakes there, and also the people. I think more than anything, it's the commitment, the sense of trust, and that sense of joy. I feel that way. The villagers, you have to speak for yourself. Something draws the people there, and so. Now, what I feel now is really like village is a place. It has a mess, and it has an identity, okay? And people do care about this place. Now, the next period is about leveraging. So, for example, the Eagles came, you know? They want to build something, but their park keep on being broken down. So they came to us, and there's a charter school wants to be there. And the merchants, yes, the other thing is that, I mean, we are not urban planners, but we found ourselves now trying to plan urban, like lots. We're counting lots, right? Yitundi, you're counting lots. You have lots out of your ears. You know, we don't know where to keep them because we are not, you know, so but we have this grant from Bulim Pan. Now we're planning greening Germantown corridor from 2800 and all the way to APM. No, that's from to 6 and Diamond. Then we're aligning force with them. APM is this fabulous, fabulous organization built transforming North Philadelphia. So then they are going to move to work on Germantown to Girard. You know, then Huntington South, pick it up and then move it, connect to Center City. I mean, that's big stuff. That's big stuff. And what another interesting thing is that the Germantown corridor, like the community, is very frail. We right now are building, Larry knows, you know, we have wonderful architecture students who are going to help us organize, because it's all put together by Band-Aid. Our building start to sink, so we figured how to, you know, secure the thing or stay now, you know, so, and we were going to build a big capital campaign. It's like what everybody else does with chemo center, you know. I just didn't feel right, because I feel, do I want to spend next 2 years sleep and eat just capital campaign? I was not ready. You know, something was not. So finally, we felt it doesn't make sense to make a $4 million or $6 million, right? You know, take building there when the rest of the community or the Germantown is not doing well. Because if the commercial district is not doing well, the whole area will go, you know? And so one of our board member is from the German, president of the Germantown Association. And he said, how can the village help the merchants? I said, man, isn't that a challenge? You know, how do we do that? So last week, we called a meeting. You know, we line up the stakeholders and we called a meeting. There were more merchants showed up, and they are interested. They feel there is a lot of potentials. You know, they want to make things, make it look better. So I think part of the reason that it's good timing that I'm here, so many young people and our, you know, staff are here, is because I know that a lot of universities and a lot of professionals, you know, like Harvard is the School of Design, they are having a symposium about community. You know, how do you get the professional designers, health professions, you know, the hospitals in here, they want to build branch to reach people, because people don't go, you know, to those places. So it really, how do you have this, all this technology there, how do you root it in the community? That there, you have life. You have life. You have innovations. You have surprise. You have talents. And you have all the problems you need too, you know, that challenge. And so then the society right now, we talked about the huge gap and going to be more with the global economy. You know, in that light, individual voices, that's what village is about. You know, we are out there instead of integrating into what you call Broad Street, Broadway, Broad Street, senior moment, you see? Arts Avenue. Avenue of the Arts. So instead, so right now for us, you know, it's very important we stay outside and not become a part of the structure, because I feel for the sake of democracy, you know, and also to really honor each one of us. We talked about equality. How are you equal? Some people own so much. Our people own so little, trying to pay electric bill. How is that equal? Is that here? You know, doesn't matter where, but if you're in touch with that and you're young, you know, the future is yours. It is so important. I almost feel somehow this is a critical moment that I'm back here, that you are interested. You know, this is way, you know, into the dinner hours and we're talking about that. And if you want real project, you know, like instead of just doing city planning design in your office or in your studio and so forth, we got real project with real people and train the young people as your apprentice. That's how you get fed. It's the people. It's real relationship and not the relationship just in classroom or in cocktail or in party. You know why are children going crazy with drinking? Because they want to test their potential. They want to know what the world is. It's not just the mundane getting up 9 o'clock and pay your bills. I mean, that will make a person diminish. Our young people crave something transform. We got it in bundles and in trucks, loads, and so forth. Life, you know? It's so full, we can't contain it. It breaks us. But if you have all that, come and root that in, fantastic thing will happen. Like me, little person, start from the beginning. And such a private journey. I never dreamed of sharing it. You know, I remember for the first 6 years, I used to hide it. I wouldn't tell anybody. Nobody would thought that I was crazy, you know. And now people want to know that. Why? And why did I go back? Because there's nothing and nowhere I go that feed me the way that I need to be fed. There's no contact as deep as I have with people at the village. You know, like big men. It's like that life and death. And so we talk about cutting edge. You know, you said innovation, cutting edge. Boy, that's hard to live there because it means life and death. You know what? Part of the power of village, I only show you the good part. You go there, there's trash-filled houses, right? It's like that. And then our murals right next to things breaking down, you know? And it's still decaying. But the power is that you put your best effort, whatever it is. It might collapse and die, but this case, it caught. You know, and not only a cat caught, it draws so many people to come there because it provides something we don't get it anywhere else. And so, but anyway, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah. I think I must not forget the business, right? We have brochures, we have website. If you want to volunteer and whatever, we are there for you. Okay, thank you so much.